Good morning and welcome to the Friday edition of Times the Brief. I'm Harvey Kojan, and these are the top stories of the day. Times the Brief is supported by Squarespace, providing tools for creative individuals and business owners to make a website. Squarespace includes hosting, e-commerce, and 24/7 customer care. Learn more at squarespace.com/thebrief.
Authorities are investigating after a shooting at Savannah State University killed a student and prompted a lockdown at the Georgia school. A statement posted on the university's website identified the victim as Christopher Starks, a junior from the Atlanta area. The statement says he died at a hospital from gunshot wounds sustained during an altercation at the student union Thursday evening. Loretta Hayward, a spokeswoman for the university, told the Associated Press the campus lockdown was lifted around midnight Thursday. The school's statement says no arrests have been made, and the Georgia Bureau of Investigation is handling the investigation with assistance from campus police. The university says classes will be delayed Friday until 10 a.m., and grief counselors will be available on campus. This story posted by the Associated Press.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved a new drug for treating high cholesterol levels on Thursday. Repatha is made by Amgen and is the second of a new class of lipid-lowering agents that are hitting the market. Known as PCSK9 inhibitors, these drugs work by suppressing genes that slow down production of cholesterol receptors on the liver. With these medications, more receptors that are free to emerge and act like sponges can soak up LDL cholesterol and lower their levels in the blood. Repatha was first approved by the European Medicines Agency in July. In the same month, the U.S. FDA approved another drug in the same class, Praluent, made by Sanofi and Regeneron. In studies, both drugs helped to lower cholesterol levels in the blood by 60% more than the amount achieved by statins. The drugs carry labels that say medication should be used first in people with a strong family history of high cholesterol conditions or in people who have tried and not responded to statin medications. PCSK9 inhibitors were discovered among a group of people who happened to have genetic mutations that gave them extremely low cholesterol levels. Researchers studied this rare population and found they did not have any negative health effects from their mutation other than the beneficial effect on their lipids. So drug makers began investigating ways to replicate the condition with a medication. Having another drug that can lower cholesterol levels will be a boon to treating heart disease, which remains the leading killer of Americans each year. Keeping cholesterol levels down, in addition to eating a healthy diet and exercising to maintain weight, are crucial to lowering the risk of heart events. This article posted by Alice Park. Asian stocks rose Friday as upbeat U.S. economic data lifted investors' spirits following days of stomach-churning turbulence sparked by a heavy sell-off in China. Japan led regional gains, but Shanghai shares were not far behind as markets took their lead from Wall Street, where benchmarks had a strong finish after a government report showed that U.S. second quarter economic growth was much stronger than initially estimated. The growth data, which also helped oil prices stage an impressive rebound, gave added encouragement to investors seeking bargains in beaten-down shares. Japan's benchmark Nikkei 225 index climbed 3% to 19,124.85 after lackluster monthly data on inflation and household spending raised hopes of further stimulus. The Shanghai Composite Index in mainland China rose 2.1% to 3,149.35, adding to its 5.3% gain Thursday, which was its first increase in 6 days, during which it shed nearly 23%. World stock markets are returning to calm after the tumult of the past 2 weeks, which saw Chinese stocks plunge, wiping out gains for the year on jitters over the economy and a surprise devaluation of the yuan. Analysts warn there may be further volatility ahead. Uncertainties regarding China and the emerging world are likely to linger, and uncertainty still remains around the Fed, said Shane Oliver, head of investment strategy at AMP Capital. However, he added that he believes markets have bottomed out and a cyclical bull market is likely to resume. Despite the recent setback, share markets are likely to remain in a broad rising trend, he said. Recent market turmoil has thrown into doubt expectations for a Federal Reserve interest rate hike in September, with most economists now saying it's off the table for now. Fed officials hold their annual meeting at Jackson Hole, Wyoming this weekend, which will be heavily scrutinized for clues on the rate hike timing. South Korea's KOSPI climbed 1.5% to 1937.16, while Hong Kong's Hang Seng added 0.7% to 21,984.11. Australia's S&P ASX 200 gained 0.5% to 5,259. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average climbed 2.3% to close at 16,654.77, recouping nearly half of its losses over the past 2 days following a sharp 6-day slump. The S&P 500 index gained 2.4% to 1987.66, and the Nasdaq composite rose 2.5% to 48,1271. The dollar slipped to 121.09 yen from 121.12 in late trading Thursday. The euro climbed to $1.1254 from $1.1242. Benchmark U.S. crude oil extended gains, rising 68 cents to 43.24 in electronic trading. On Thursday, the contract posted its biggest one-day gain in 6 years, leaping $3.96 or 10.3% to $42.56 a barrel. Brent crude, a benchmark for international oils imported by U.S. refineries, rose 74 cents to $48.34 in London. This article posted by Kelvin Chan for the Associated Press in Hong Kong. Greece's first female prime minister, a top judge, was sworn in Thursday to head a caretaker government ahead of early elections next month in the bailout-dependent country. Supreme Court head Vasiliki Thanou, 65, was appointed after radical left Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras resigned, seeking a stronger mandate to implement tough austerity measures demanded by Greece's creditors in return for a third bailout worth 86 billion euro. Her main task will be to hold the reins until a new government emerges from the vote expected on September 20th. But given the circumstances, I believe that this government will also have to handle crucial matters, Thanou said in her first public comments in office, singling out for mention Greece's immigration crisis. Since January, the financially struggling country has received more than 160,000 mainly Syrian refugees and economic migrants, a record number, who arrive in boats from Turkey before heading to wealthier European countries. Tsipras was forced to step down last week, barely 7 months into his 4-year term, following a rebellion in his radical left Syriza party over his agreement to the new income cuts and tax hikes. Syriza hardliners were furious that Tsipras signed the deal with even harsher terms than those he had vowed to abolish when he was elected in January. The deal was approved with support from pro-European opposition parties, who now accuse him of rushing to call elections before voters are hit by the full force of the new tax measures. The 41-year-old outgoing prime minister has argued he was left with no choice but to accept European creditors' demands to save Greece from defaulting on its debts and being forced out of the euro currency it shares with another 18 European nations. Thanou will appoint a cabinet that will be sworn in on Friday when the election date will be formally confirmed. Greek President Prokopis Pavlopoulos announced her appointment after Parliament's three largest parties failed to find willing coalition partners. The last to hold the mandate to form a government was former Energy Minister Panagionis Lafazanis, who created the new Popular Unity Party last week after splitting with Syriza. Greece has relied on funds from two bailouts by other European countries and the International Monetary Fund, totaling nearly 240 billion euros since 2010. In return for the loans, successive governments imposed deeply resented spending cuts that slashed incomes by more than a third, deepened a dire recession, and pushed unemployment well over 25%. The second bailout expired earlier this year, and Tsipras insisted he could negotiate a better deal for his country. But the talks with creditors floundered and eventually collapsed in June, with Tsipras calling a referendum and urging Greeks to vote against creditor demands. They overwhelmingly did so, but the prime minister eventually signed up to even stricter demands in return for the third three-year rescue loan agreement. Despite his about-face on policies, Tsipras is expected to win the next election, although it's unclear whether he will secure enough parliamentary seats to govern alone. He has ruled out a coalition with any of the centrist opposition parties, center-right New Democracy, the socialist PASOK Party, or the small centrist Toe Potami Party. Unless other smaller parties manage to enter parliament, that would leave his current coalition partner, the nationalist Independent Greeks, which, however, may struggle to cross the 3% parliamentary threshold. Tsipras is not expected to form a government with the new Popular Unity Party, the Nazi-inspired Golden Dawn, whose leader and lawmakers still face criminal charges, or the communist KKE Party. This article posted by Elena Bakateros and Nicholas Pafidis for the Associated Press in Athens.
Hurricane Katrina surprised disaster preparedness authorities when it made landfall 10 years ago, leveling entire communities and killing more than 1,800 people. The storm caused more than $100 billion in damage, making it the costliest natural disaster in U.S. history. But for all the damage the storm caused in New Orleans, Katrina was a relatively weak hurricane when it hit the city. In the academic community, the unexpected disaster prompted climate scientists to consider the link between climate change and storms. Since then, research has shown that climate change will increase the devastation caused by hurricanes as sea levels rise due to global warming. Some research has also suggested that climate change has increased the intensity and frequency of storms. The phenomenon of storm surge plays an essential role in the worsening effect of hurricanes. Storm surge occurs when waters rise above their normal level during a storm, and wind and weather conditions push that water onto shore. Thanks to global warming and rising sea levels, the potential for ocean water to be washed ashore by a storm surge has risen as well. During Katrina, storm surge pushed ashore the water, causing levees to fail. The storm was recorded as a hurricane of Category 1 or Category 2 strength when it hit New Orleans, relatively weak for such a devastating hurricane. But the storm surge reached as high as 12 feet in some places, creating flood conditions across the city and wreaking havoc with the city's levee system. Hurricane Sandy, which hit New York City in 2012, cost $2 billion more due to sea level rise than it would have otherwise, according to a RAND report. The strong winds in Katrina essentially blew water from the Gulf up across southern Louisiana, said Hugh Roberts, associate vice president of Arcadis, a firm that has consulted on Louisiana's rebuilding efforts. Once it hits land, it begins to build up. In the future, rising sea levels will only exacerbate the storm surge problem. Around the globe, sea levels are estimated to rise 1 to 3 feet by 2100 due to climate change, and researchers say that in places like New Orleans, 1 foot of sea level rise may lead to a 3 or 4 foot storm surge rise. While scientists have come to a consensus about how storm surge will affect cities, research on how climate change affects hurricane strength and intensity remains unclear, and no findings have been positive. Many peer-reviewed studies suggest that warmer weather in tropical oceans has increased the frequency of tropical storm activity, though not necessarily the intensity. Others suggest that climate change has made storms more intense. Still, other research has suggested that future storms will be both more frequent and more intense. The projection of more frequent and more intense hurricanes might surprise even the casual weather observer. Indeed, a major hurricane of Category 3 or higher hasn't hit U.S. soil since 2005, according to a study from earlier this year. But the so-called hurricane drought shouldn't be viewed as an indication of what's to come. This year's strong El Niño will likely reduce the chance of powerful hurricanes. Increased hurricane risk due to climate change presents a unique challenge for policymakers. While the federal government has promoted cuts to greenhouse gas emissions in hopes of slowing climate change, Preparing for more dramatic storms requires local solutions. Even if countries around the world stem global warming, sea level rise will occur. There is no uncertainty about sea level rise, said RAND researcher Jordan Fishbach, who led a Louisiana flood risk assessment team. As we get more sea level rise, these large storm events will with certainty damage assets and people.
Star Wars's official Instagram account on Thursday uploaded new footage from The Force Awakens, taking full advantage of the app's new change that allows users to upload landscape and portrait mode photos and video. The new footage first shows another angle on a scene we've already seen in the trailers, wherein a bunch of First Order bad guys are gathered in a Nazi-esque rally. But the second and third clips are very new, Rey looking very concerned with droid newcomer BB-8 in the background. And then there's the really good stuff. One of the film's villains, Kylo Ren, activates his controversial three-bladed lightsaber. We've seen that. Then maybe bad guy turned good guy Finn flips on his blue lightsaber. Looks like Luke's, presumably in defense. That's new. Expect lots more of these little snippets to pop up here and there before the film's December 18th release. This article posted by Alex Fitzpatrick. Times the Brief is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Try Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter offer code THEBRIEF at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace. Build it beautiful. About 24 hours after two of their colleagues were fatally shot during a live broadcast, the staff of Virginia television station WDBJ honored them with a moment of silence Thursday morning. The three anchors were visibly emotional and holding hands as they remarked on the deaths of journalist Allison Parker and camera operator Adam Ward. The peacefulness of our community was shattered, anchor Kim McBroom says. As we approach that moment, we want to pause and reflect. She then asks viewers to hold a moment of silence as Parker and Ward's images are projected on the screen. Parker and Ward were gunned down during a live broadcast Wednesday morning by Vester Flanagan, a disgruntled former employee. Flanagan died later that day from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. This article posted by Tessa Berenson. A rash of fatalities from Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, MERS, has been reported in Saudi Arabia, where 19 people have died after contracting the disease this week alone. Including the recent spate, the kingdom's health ministry has recorded 502 fatalities and 1,171 reported cases since June 2012, when the virus first appeared, reports AFP. The surge in infections comes as Saudi Arabia prepares to host about 2 million Muslims who will travel to the country for the annual Hajj pilgrimage next month. Health authorities shut down the emergency ward in one of the capital Riyadh's largest hospitals last week after at least 46 people, including hospital staff, contracted the disease. MERS is a viral respiratory infection that causes fever, coughs, and breathing difficulties. It is caused by a coronavirus and is considered more deadly but less contagious than its cousin, severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS, which spread globally in 2002 at an eventual cost of more than 8,000 lives. This article posted by Helen Regan. China continued its probe this week into recent irregularities in the stock market, naming two more executives of the country's top brokerage firm, CITIC Securities, in an investigation into market manipulation and insider trading. A total of 8 employees from CITIC were taken in for questioning by Chinese police on Tuesday, along with 2 officials of the China Securities Regulatory Commission and a reporter for prominent business magazine Caixin, accused of spreading false information, the South China Morning Post reported. The detained brokers, suspected of malicious short selling that led to the Chinese stock market's recent volatility, include CITIC's managing director and two members of the investment bank's executive committee. They are also suspected of forging government documents. The severity of the problem and the depth of the investigations turned out to beat many people's expectations, a source connected to CITIC told the SCMP. It is a sign more influential securities industry officials will be uncovered as the authorities deepen investigations. This article posted by Rishi Iyengar. Streets across Dominica turned into fast-flowing rivers that swept up cars as Tropical Storm Erica pummeled the eastern Caribbean island, unleashing landslides and killing at least 4 people. The storm, which forecasters said could reach Florida as a hurricane on Monday, knocked out power and water supplies on Dominica as it dumped 15 inches of rain on the small island and headed west into the Caribbean Sea. An elderly blind man and 2 children were killed when a mudslide crashed into their home in the southeast of the island, said a police superintendent. Another man was found dead near his home after a mudslide, but the cause of death could not be immediately determined. Police said another 20 people have been reported missing. Erica was centered about 175 miles west of Guadalupe and was moving west at 15 miles per hour with maximum sustained winds that had slipped slightly to 45 miles per hour, according to the U.S. National Hurricane Center in Miami. Erica was expected to move near Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands on Thursday and be near or just north of the Dominican Republic on Friday as it heads toward Florida early next week, possibly as a hurricane. Chris Lancey, a meteorologist at the Hurricane Center, said the storm could dissipate if it passed over Hispaniola or Puerto Rico, or it could gather and pose a potential threat to Florida next week. The uncertainties are very high, he said. As the storm entered the Caribbean, it did the heaviest damage to Dominica, an island of about 72,000 people of lush forests and steep terrain. Authorities were still conducting a full damage assessment after rivers surged over their banks and walls of mud surged into homes. About 80% of the island was without electricity and water supply was cut off, authorities said. Trees and light poles were strewn across streets as water rushed over parked cars and ripped the scaffolding off some buildings. The main airport was closed due to flooding, with water rushing over at least one small plane. The main river that cuts through the capital overflowed its banks and surging water crashed into the principal bridge that leads into Rosu. The capital city is a wreck, policewoman Tisha Alfred said. It is a sight to behold. It's a disaster. Erica was likely to hit the island of Hispaniola, which is shared by Haiti and the Dominican Republic, said chief forecaster James Franklin at the National Hurricane Center. That would certainly not be good news for Hispaniola, he said. They're very vulnerable to flooding, and even if Erica is a weak system, that could be very bad there. Officials shuttered schools, government offices, and businesses across the region and warned of flash flooding because of dry conditions caused by the worst drought to hit the Caribbean in recent years. Authorities warned power and water service might be temporarily cut off. Puerto Rico Governor Alejandro Garcia Padilla said the storm could bring badly needed rains to the parched U.S. territory. We're happy given the dry conditions, but it does highlight the need to be on alert, he said, adding that heavy downpours could lead to flash floods. He activated the National Guard as a precaution. The heaviest rains were expected to hit Puerto Rico's eastern region, with the storm expected to pass about 30 miles north of the island overnight Thursday, said Odalis Martinez with the National Weather Service in San Juan. Erica is expected to dump between 4 to 8 inches of rain across the region, with up to 12 inches in some areas. Dozens of flights were canceled in the region, and the U.S. Coast Guard closed all ports in Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Meanwhile, in the Pacific, Ignacio strengthened into a hurricane. The storm's maximum sustained winds increased Thursday morning to 90 miles per hour. Hurricane Ignacio was centered about 1,135 miles east-southeast of Hilo, Hawaii, and was moving west-northwest near 13 miles per hour. Also in the Pacific, a new tropical storm formed Thursday morning. Tropical Storm Ximena had maximum sustained winds near 45 miles per hour and was expected to strengthen to a hurricane Friday. Ximena was centered about 890 miles south-southwest of the southern tip of Mexico's Baja California Peninsula. This article posted by Carlisle Baptiste and Danica Cotto for the Associated Press in Dominica. Cotto reported from San Juan, Puerto Rico. Associated Press reporters Ben Fox and Tony Winton in Miami contributed to this report. One of the trickiest questions for a Soyuz spacecraft approaching the International Space Station, the ISS, is where to park. The ISS may be larger than a football field, but it's got only so many ways to get inside, and with crewed spacecraft and uncrewed cargo ships regularly shuttling up and down, docking ports, or at least the right docking port, can be at a premium. In the pre-dawn hours of September 28th, space station astronaut Scott Kelly, along with cosmonauts Mikhail Kornienko and Gennady Patalka, will be required to do a bit of delicate flying to sort just that kind of problem out. The three crewmen arrived at the station on March 29th, with Patalka slated to spend 6 months aloft and Kelly and Kornienko scheduled for a marathon 1 year in space. They docked their Soyuz spacecraft at the station's Poisk module, a 16-foot Russian node that was added to the ISS in 2009 as a science lab, observation point, and egress compartment for astronauts embarking on spacewalks. It's remained there ever since, and that's a concern. The five-plus months the ship has been hanging off the station in the alternating searing heat and deep freeze of orbital space can take its toll on the hardware, and since the crews rely on the ships as their way back to Earth, NASA and the Russian space agency Roscosmos instituted a rule. 180 days is the maximum amount of time a Soyuz can remain aloft before detaching and returning to Earth. But Kelly and Kornienko are set to stay for 365 days, which complicates their ride home. Their Soyuz is not the only one that's on hand. There's another one for the other three crew members who are currently aboard. Another NASA Roscosmos rule, there must always be enough seats for everyone to be able to bail out immediately in the event of an emergency. And on September 2nd, a third ship carrying three more crew members is set to arrive for a changeover of personnel. Not all docking nodes are equal. The Poisk is a better target since it faces Earth, and that requires a little juggling. Mission rules, to say nothing of basic physics, make the job a delicate one. At 3.09 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, the complete Patalka-Kornienko-Kelly team will climb fully suited into their Soyuz. Technically, it does not take all three men to do the job. Patalka, who is one of the most experienced Soyuz pilots, has joked that he could fly the thing with two cabbages in the other seats. But in the event of Soyuz emergency requiring an immediate re-entry, all three men must be aboard, lest a solitary pilot come home, leaving five people aboard the ISS and only three seats on the remaining Soyuz. The crew will then undock from the Poisk and redock to the nearby Svedsta module, or service module, a straight distance of only a few dozen yards. But these kinds of orbital maneuvers require care, with both the station and the Soyuz orbiting the Earth at 17,133 miles per hour, but moving just a few feet or inches at a time relative to each other. They'll undock, then back out 200 meters or so, says NASA TV commentator and overall space station authority Rob Navius. Then they'll fly around to the back end of the service module, do a lateral translation, fly retrograde, then move in for a docking at the aft end of the module. If that sounds like an awfully complicated way to say essentially that they'll back up, turn around, and pull in at another door, it's less technobabble than it is a reflection of the complexity of even the most straightforward maneuvers in space. Two of the newly arriving crew members will be only short-timers, staying on the station for just 10 days. They'll then fly home with Padalka in the older ship, leaving the fresh one for Kelly, Kornienko, and another crew member 6 months later. The ISS may be the most complicated job site on or off the planet, but it's one that could proudly display a sign reading 14 years without an accident. Playing by all the workplace safety rules will help keep that record going. This article posted by Jeffrey Kluger. On August 29, 2005, Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans after gaining strength in the warm waters of the Gulf of Mexico. Within days, the city's levees collapsed, tens of thousands were left stranded in their homes, and thousands more sought shelter at the city's Superdome, where conditions rapidly deteriorated. Almost 2,000 people died in the storm, and hundreds of thousands were forced to relocate, some permanently. 10 years on, New Orleans is still a city recovering, a place where the storm's path still leaves a scar. The costliest hurricane on record dramatically changed the city's demographics, neighborhoods, and economy. The damage. Hurricane Katrina is the costliest U.S. hurricane on record and the deadliest to strike the country since 1928, killing 1,833, making landfall on August 25, 2005, in South Florida. It strengthened in the Gulf of Mexico before becoming a Category 3 storm as it hit New Orleans. The rebuilding. After the storm and levee system failure, 80% of New Orleans flooded, displacing tens of thousands. Today, the metro area has returned to 90% of its pre-Katrina population. The city is even back on the list of the 50 most populous U.S. cities. This article posted by Josh Sanborn. Thanks for joining us. I'm Harvey Kojan, and you've been listening to the daily edition of Times the Brief. To get this sent to your inbox every morning, go to time.com/thebrief. You can also subscribe through iTunes or your favorite podcast app. I'll be back tomorrow. Until then, enjoy the day.